You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 7:59, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
Open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Hello, KBOO community. Since 2014, KBOO has used the concept of the beloved community popularized by Martin Luther King Jr. to give us a framework for ensuring that we intentionally create space for dialogue between KBOO community members so KBOO continues to flourish as a space for creative collaboration. A small group of KBOO volunteers and staff are meeting monthly to help ensure that the beloved community work of KBOO's three-year strategic plan moves forward in a good way and continues to support us in being a better and better community and radio station. Most recently, we drafted a statement on what the term beloved community at KBOO means, and we would love your input by September 30th. Please go to kboo.fm or stop by the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue for a paper copy of the survey. This will take 5 minutes of your time. Your input will help us make sure this statement is the strongest, clearest, and most inspiring and most inclusive statement it can be. Please email del@kboo.org if you have any questions. Thank you.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning. The time is about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are Positively Revolting. And we have with us in the studio also Teresa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
She thought it was still membership drive and showed up, so we thought we'd just have her on the show.
When's the next pitch? what's the goal?
Teresa, let's tell our friends how we're doing. We thank you, oh dear listeners, for your generous support during our fall membership drive, which successfully concluded last night. Thank you. Thank you so much. And ka-ching. Oh, look, Teresa, you spilled coffee in a sound studio. Ooh.
Not badly.
No. Well, we call it merely a splash. But that is all beside the point. We are here this morning. Wow. There has been so much going on They're really, the term dumpster fire does not adequately even begin to.
We keep using that term because.
Because we can't say other words on the radio.
I know. And
but none of them seem adequate.
I know.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem adequate. There is so much going on. And while the headlines seem to be really firmly. Teresa. While the headlines seem to be really firmly locked onto NFL and whether it is okay for them to take the knee or whatever, other things are going on in this world. And even the NFL story is being told from a point of view that's not particularly illustrative, not particularly enlightening. And so we are inviting you, dear listener, to call on in with the topic that you feel has been most underreported, the story that you want to highlight, the story you want to yell up from the mountaintops, and what you're thinking about it. That's what we want to hear from you this very morning at 503-231-8187.
So, but about the NFL story, and, you know, we've discussed this a lot this week, is that one of the things, there are folks out there that will listen to coaches. I posted, there is a, I'll put it on the Positively Revolting Facebook page, a really great description from the San Diego Spurs coach, Greg Popovich, about whiteness and racism. Now, there are people that may not listen to anyone talk about that sort of stuff that will are possibly listening to this fellow. Does that make sense to anyone here? I mean, I like that. There was also this quote that I got this morning because the whole Star Spangled Banner business having to do the national anthem is pretty new. Apparently, the NFL players only started coming on field for the national anthem in 2009, and the reason was the government paid them to stage patriotic displays to boost military recruitment. Aha! The Department of Defense and the National Guard paid the NFL a combined $12.3 million between 2011 and 2015. So the next time you think NFL players should stay out of politics, remember, politics injected itself into the NFL first. And those players never got a say. Actually, they did have a say at that time, but nobody was thinking they should say anything about it. And Colin Kirkpatrick started... I'm doing his last name wrong.
Probably. Kaepernick.
Kaepernick, thank you. Colin Kaepernick started a movement, and the fact that that's my thing, that I am glad that it has injected itself into the NFL, simply for the amount of people that can be reached about their attitudes about whiteness, which is, as we know, as Teresa Mitchell has on her show many times talked to us about, a false equivalent, isn't it?
Well, you could certainly use that as a connecting theme for today's headlines. The mayor of San Juan, I think it was, had to push back against
the governor,
the Homeland Security Secretary. Let's see. I can read this, actually. Mayor of San Juan had to back off the Secretary of Homeland Security, Elaine Duke, because she said that the Hurricane Maria's effort was a good news story. And he had to back it off and say, really, it's a people are dying story. And it really is. I mean, Puerto Rico, the whole center of the country is just practically unreachable. The supplies, late as they are piling up in the ports. There should be, should have been, the real story is that by now there should have been a massive military-level relief effort. There should be Sikorsky double-rotor helicopters pulling those container loads out of the port because they don't have the means otherwise to do it. And it's the parallels to Katrina are just really stacking up. And so in comes the head of Homeland Security, and she's echoing Trump's attitude that, oh, you know, everything's great. They're doing such a great job. The phrase that's been bouncing around in the press, of course, is heck of a job, Brownie. And that's a reference to Katrina, and it seems appropriate. And this is a case where propaganda against a nation of people of color is quite effectively destroying their lives.
And I think it's also super important to realize the intentional genociding of people in New Orleans with Katrina pretty much paved the way to prosperous real estate development.
Shock doctrine, gentrification, capitalism.
Yeah, and I misspoke. Exactly, it's not a nation. It's our nation. It's this nation, and these are Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're watching, really, to my observation, we are watching that same phenomenon right now in Puerto Rico, and we will be watching it being open for gentrification and development. I'm going to go ahead and lay money on that.
Oh, well, and all the disasters this year, I mean, when Kate Brown asked the feds for help with our fires, Blue State, they said no.
Mm-hmm.
Things came out to Texas and Florida pretty fast.
And again,
red state. Puerto Rico is a no state because though they are American citizens, they are not allowed to vote.
Welcome to colonialism.
Yes.
In the 21st century.
I don't know how you can be a citizen and not be able to vote, but apparently it happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, that.
Mm-hmm. Bit of a conundrum.
Well, they just don't have representation in Congress.
They do have somebody in Congress who can't vote.
Who can't vote, yes. Yes.
No, they do.
Well, let's go ahead and talk to our callers, shall we? 503-231-8187. The bases are loaded. Good morning, Dougie. You're on the air.
Sports reference.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi there.
Thanks for letting me ask off. Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing okay. All right.
Well, thanks for allowing me the opportunity to, you know, scream from the top of my lungs. It is completely outrageous that, you know, for so many centuries, the Republican Party has been able to manipulate working class and middle class white people to vote against their own self-interest. And I don't think that it was a surprise that 1 week before Donald Trump releases his budget that will take $5 trillion out of money that could go to so many different things, which will give a tax break to the top 1% at a time when we're facing the worst inequality that we faced since the 1920s, where the bottom 90% of the country is sharing 7% of the wealth. And as a distraction, Donald Trump wages a race war with the NFL for people taking a knee when every year, right now we're up to close to 800 people who have been killed by police. And that conversation has been distracted over an argument talking about the flag and worshiping militarism. So I don't think it was a coincidence that Donald Trump did that right before they released this budget that's going to give trillions of dollars to the top, to the 1%. And then on top of it all, after every year, I was just listening to Democracy Now, where we're given every year over the past decade, we're spending over $240 billion a year on the effects of climate change, and that doesn't include the $360 billion that just got contributed to it after the effects of Texas, Florida, and now Puerto Rico. And so I'm going crazy because we've known about climate change since the 80s, and ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers have spent so much money on climate change denialism that only 17% of the United States population even believes that climate change is something that could have disastrous consequences in our future. So,
even though,
I guess,
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, even though this year is, you know, on top of, well, following after the years of Katrina and Hurricane Sandy, this year is so obviously, patently, a climate change disaster year. In Florida, they don't they have laws that you can't can't call it climate change in certain forums in the government. They still have to deal with it. They still have to raise the roads and develop new flood plans and do all sorts of infrastructure change to deal with the fact that the ocean's higher, but they don't want to call it climate change because it's it makes the you know, when you get right down to it, it makes the very rich people angry.
So I'm just, when do you think that the people are going to wake the hell up and realize that the government has been taken over by ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers, and that the Republican Party
They haven't woken up to that fact yet. I'm just curious as to what would wake them. And obviously having good information sources is a big part of that. So again, go independent media and KABU. But we need to actually catch people's attention and draw them away from the spectacle that kind of keeps people numbed out. You know, as long as people might have a deep sense that something is terribly wrong. But when you're too busy struggling to, you know, just survive in a world that is increasingly anxious and stressed, it's hard to actually spend time and energy on analyzing what that wrong thing is. So one feels powerless and sort of caught in a trap without actual agency to try to change one's condition.
Do y'all think that eventually people will connect the dots that, you know, the oil industry, these people have enough carbon in oil reserves to warm the planet 10 degrees Fahrenheit, 5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century? It will be a complete catastrophe for our children and their children. Obama had made a quote that we're the first generation who is actually living through and experiencing climate change, and we're the last generation that's going to be able to have an opportunity of stopping it. Do you think that our generation will eventually step up to the plate and stop this, possibly the destruction of
It depends on who you're listening to. Really, there are people who say that scale's tipped and that, you know, we can try to mitigate it, but there ain't no stopping it at this point. And I tend to believe that. I think that actually the you know, I remember seventh grade science class and talking about the greenhouse effect in 1978. I remember that. And I remember my teacher, who is from a very conservative grade school in Portland, and was not a flaming radical, saying scientists are working on this problem now. So I don't think we're the first generation to try to do anything. I don't think that, you know, I think that there's been a lot of people working on the issue for a while, and there's been corporate interests who are trying to drown out those voices calling for that change, trying to slow down or mitigate or stop climate destruction. And we're going to go on, and we have a couple more people on hold. I thank you very much for your call this morning. Mm-hmm. Totally thought-provoking.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. These are the huge questions we are going to be wrestling with, right, for the rest of our lives. And how much change can we affect? I don't know. But I think it's incumbent upon us to affect whatever we can, because this is, you know, this is, as Teresa was saying, the year that it became really apparent in the U.S. that climate change is happening all around us.
Well, certainly Puerto Ricans know how dire the situation is. I mean, I think it's shocking that the mayor of San Juan has to be the one to back off the press and say that they had received 3 pallets of water for the city of San Juan. They received 3 pallets of water. That's 4,000 bottles for a population of 350,000 people, and they've received 4 pallets of food and 12 pallets of baby food and supplies. There's more than 3 million people, 3 million U.S. citizens, more than that, on the island of Puerto Rico, and they are cut off, and the supplies are not getting to them, and it just couldn't be worse. And so, here we have the corporate media just relaying, just being stenographers for what the Trump administration says and saying, oh, we're doing a great job.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk to our next caller, Sue. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. This is Sue. Number one, I want to point out that Cuba had a fabulous response to the hurricane. They train all of their citizens, and it's to help everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the second point is, I think this is another shock doctrine / Haiti libertarians' wet dream, where they get to go and take over the entire island just like they screwed up Haiti. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah,
I don't think you'd be far from
I think you find full concurrent here. Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to add this morning?
Nope, that's good.
Thank you very much for your call. Take care. And Francis, good morning to you. You are on the air.
Hey.
Hey, Francis.
Wow. Anyway, let's see. The thing that I see, though, you know, the answer to all the questions all lead to these corporations. And that POTUS has lifted up the rug. And they're all there for everybody to see. So it's a matter of how we're going to handle this. Because the corporations are running things at the moment. It's a momentary thing, but it's we got to do something. And can you even say the B word on cable?
I'm not sure, but let's just not.
I'm not going to say it.
You know, Francis, we had John Nichols on last week, and I said to him, what is the key thing? And he said military-industrial complex. An old term, but still very...
But to the knees... You know, throughout history, kneeling has always been viewed as more humble and respectful than standing. And for this man to construe that as something disrespectful, from people who are kneeling to ask, to hope, that this country that flag is supposed to stand for will uphold the 14th Amendment of that country's constitution, which provides for due process and equal protection under the law for recently released people who were liberated from slavery by the 13th Amendment, and it was discovered that they were not receiving equal treatment under the law. So the 14th Amendment was passed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to this date, that due process has never been equal, ever. That's why these young men are kneeling. And for that man that calls himself POTUS to disrespect them and their mothers the way he did, I don't care if he's doing it to play to his base or if it's coming from his heart. That was the most un-American thing that man could do. He's violating the 14th Amendment, and he's also violating the oath he took to uphold the Constitution of this country. And for anybody to say otherwise, they're not getting it, or they're a racist. Pure and simple. And they need to think about why they're a racist, because whenever they're discovered to be one, they always deny it.
Yeah, that's important.
So if that's so shameful to be, then stop being it.
That's the most important part of holding up racism.
Our children's lives are valuable, and they are supposed to be equally protected, and they are not. And anybody that tries to say that those young men are being unpatriotic doesn't even understand what this country is supposed to be. And I'm sorry. I'm very upset right now. I've worked myself up here. But people need to understand, there's a whole lot of us, including myself, who are taking a knee with those people, those young men, every time we see them taking one, whether we're at our kitchen table or wherever we are, until this country is what it's supposed to be or professes to be.
Thank you.
And George Clooney wrote a beautiful poem, and it's called, I think, When I Pray... I kneel. And it says it right there. When I pray, I kneel. And that's what these young men are doing, and what everybody who supports them is doing.
Thank you, Francis.
Thanks, Francis.
Take care.
You too. All right. We have a couple of things going on. We are going to shift gears here in just a couple moments. But first, I want to get in our last caller for the first segment of our show, Harry, who has been holding. But then we are going to shift gears here in just a few moments and talk with Sahan McElvey from SEI about an upcoming event that they have and a program that they offer. So we're going to shift gears in a moment, but first, Harry. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. My sister lives on St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands, on the west side where the hurricane hit. And it took, we didn't hear from her for 2 days. And, but we saw on satellite imaging, we picked out her house, and we saw she lost one third of her roof. But when she did call in, she says that the island is on curfew, and which means no one's allowed out of their house until the only time they're allowed to go out to get food or anything else is between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Otherwise, you have to stay in. So it's the island's that way. That's how they cleared all the roads. And the U.S. Virgin Islands, no one really speaks about the storms that hit that because St. Thomas and St. John, the two other islands of the U.S. Virgin Islands, were completely destroyed. And hopefully they're getting help, but we don't know because everyone talks about Puerto Rico, but there's another territory that we control, the U.S. Virgin Islands, mm-hmm. just a mostly black island. mm-hmm. And 80% of the island is black. So still kind of waiting to hear from my sister to see how things are going. But, it's very bad down there, and they're not getting the help that they need.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the situation is really throughout the Caribbean. I believe Sue mentioned that Cuba actually had some planned response that has helped them.
They have it down for hurricanes,
but
pretty much.
But yeah, the whole
and the hurricane season is not over.
Indeed, but yeah, the territories and really getting people to think about what that means, right? And the fact that this is a part of the world that the U.S., France, Great Britain, the Netherlands still lay claim to. And in a very imperialist manner, right? And so I think that those issues, really, we need to stay looking at those well after this disaster.
Yeah. Well, how we acquired the U.S. Virgin mm-hmm. Islands, it's our 100th anniversary of acquiring them. Mm-hmm. What happened was during World War One, the Germans took the Netherlands, and the government was, of course, in exile. And they were strapped for money, so they sold us those islands, all three islands, for $25 million.
Right.
Yeah. Now,
Harry, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. And good luck to your family.
Yeah.
excuse me. All right. Shifting gears. We are very pleased to talk with Sahan McElvey from SEI, that's Self-Enhancement Incorporated. And am I pronouncing your name even close to right?
You are almost there on the first name.
Okay.
A little bit off on the last name.
Well, tell us how to do it.
Sahan McElvey.
McElvey,
okay.
Thank you. And Sahan, you are the co-director of Community and Family Services for SEI?
Community and Family Programs.
That's correct.
And
One of the things that I've become aware of from SEI over the last couple of years is you have this event. This is your third annual Purple Mile Walk.
It is. We do have that coming up.
KBOO has been a proud co-sponsor of that event the first couple of years. And so a few weeks ago, I was talking with somebody about us partnering again, and we wanted to make sure that there was some time for our listeners to really understand what SEI is doing around domestic violence, as well as what this event is all about that's coming up in about a week from now. So let's back up a little bit. And first of all, for people that are not familiar with SEI, can you give a little overview of what SEI is?
Quick synopsis, SEI is a multi-service organization. We operate primarily in the African-American community and started out in the Northeast Portland area as gentrification has greatly affected that area over the past 5 to 10 years or so.
Oh, yeah.
the population that we primarily serve, the African American community in Portland, Oregon, has been dispersed and scattered all throughout Multnomah County now. We still physically operate primarily in North and Northeast Portland, but we serve African American families all over Multnomah County. And our mission is to create an environment within our community that allows our kids to thrive. So we work with the entire family, but our primary goal is to make sure that our kids have an opportunity to thrive educationally, emotionally, physically, psychologically, in every way possible, so that our youth are able to grow and become positive contributing citizens. Do the best thing that we can to positively affect just a cycle of oppression that has taken place in our community over decades and decades now.
And so one of the programs that you have is actually supporting people who are involved in domestic violence situations, and getting, if you could talk about the support that you have for survivors of domestic violence, as well as programs around people changing their behaviors.
So I think that programs that we have around people changing their behaviors, we utilize what we call our relationship model, which is a piece of our culture of success. Our relationship model fills gaps that have been intentionally created within African-American community. So our relationship model says that we will take on the relationship with the people that we are working with, and that could either be in a mentor role, a teacher role, or a parent role. And we feel that mentors, teachers, and parents are three very important and intentional roles that have been decimated in the African American community. So filling those gaps and filling those roles are what we would do in any of our programs to ensure positive behavior change over time. And we don't look at positive behavior change as something that we have the magic fairy dust to come in and sprinkle in
that's
and create
good. Then you
change
have a
in behavior over a couple of weeks,
right,
but over time that will work.
You have a chance of success if you don't do that, yeah.
So within our domestic violence program, we operate using that relationship model as our form of service delivery. And one of the things that we say at Self Enhancement is that when we're working with somebody, we want to put our last name on that person. So we treat them like they were our family. And I think any of us that have extended family have experiences where we've got a cousin or an uncle or somebody who has gotten themselves into some kind of disruption, some kind of trouble. And it could be because of their own decision-making. It could be because of causes not of their own make creation. But when that person calls, we're there for them because that's our family. It doesn't matter what they've gone through or what's happened in their life. Uncle Joe, that's my uncle, and when he calls, I'm still going to be there to help. So when we're working with anybody from the community, that's the lens that we want to work through, is when this person calls, I'm going to be there because that's family and I'm going to be there to help. So specifically with domestic violence survivors, I think just as any other section of our society, there have been key relationships that have been stripped out of their life, key things that have been missing, key things that when we all grow and develop, it's important for us to know that we have value, that we're loved, that we're important. And a lot of times we find survivors who have had the just terrible experience of being involved in a domestic violence relationship have somewhere along the line been convinced that some of those things aren't true.
Yeah, people don't just drop out of the sky.
Correct.
To commit domestic violence, because it's a horrible thing, and you have to have been traumatized,
absolutely,
in horrible ways to treat the people you love. That because this isn't some stranger going down the street. These are people that care about each other, usually,
and oftentimes, absolutely, it's people that care about each other. But it's a lot of situations where what caring and loving somebody really looks
like
has been misrepresented to them.
Sure.
So I believe with my whole heart that I love you, and I could not be convinced otherwise. But what love looks like to me is not necessarily what love would look like to anybody else. And that's the reason why an abuser can physically hit somebody, physically harm somebody that they say they love, and just make that work in their own mind that I love you, but I'm doing this because love doesn't look different than this to me.
Yeah.
And I believe personally that love does look very different from that, and we need to be able to demonstrate what love looks like to survivors specifically, and that would be the primary focus in our domestic violence program, but to abusers as well. We need to be able to paint a better picture, a clearer picture of what love really looks like, so that that can be modeled, and then that can be emulated.
And this is a problem that affects really millions of people.
Absolutely.
You want to talk about the scope of domestic violence?
I didn't come prepared to talk about
a
national scope, but one thing I definitely want to be able to say is that I think domestic violence is a much bigger issue in the African American community than sometimes is portrayed. And a lot of times in the African American community, we have been conditioned over the years to hide that, to put some of the issues that we have within our homes, sweep those under the rug, and not let the light of day see some of the problems that are going on. And I think that
domestic violence is the best
disinfectant. Absolutely. Like, we need to be able to bring the issue of domestic violence into light. That's the way that we're able to combat it. That's the way that we are able to bring services, education, and just the model of quality and positive relationships into a situation that can help mitigate what's a serious problem in our community.
Yeah, I mean, just a little bit of the scope of the problem. There's an article that was put out, gosh, this is like almost three years old, and it came out of Huffington Post by Alana Vegianos, and that is a little compare and contrast. American troops that were killed in Afghanistan and Iraq between 2001 and 2012, it's about 6,500. The number of American women who were murdered by current or ex-male partners during that same time is nearly 12,000. So it's almost double, right? The amount of casualties lost in a war. And so that's a little bit of a picture of the national scope. Those numbers haven't come down in the last 2 years, let's just say. And so when you talk about drawing attention and daylighting it, right, because I think that domestic violence by and large is swept under the rug, period. And I think that that might become even more true when we look at different marginalized communities and communities of color.
Absolutely.
And so when it comes to raising awareness so that women know they have options, when it comes to raising awareness so families know that there's support for everyone and know that this issue is there and should be talked about, SEI has the Purple Mile Walk.
Yes, we do.
And that is specifically to raise awareness of the situation. So let's talk about the Purple Mile Walk. It's coming up on Saturday the 7th, yeah?
That is correct. So our third annual, like you said before, third annual Purple Mile Walk for Domestic Violence Awareness and Self-Enhancement will be taking place on October 7th. We will be starting at our Community and Family Programs location at the King Neighborhood Facility, just south of King School, and we'll be walking the mile from our Community and Family Programs location to our Center for Self-Enhancement on Kirby and Failing. We do that, like I said, for the last 3 years, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month nationally, so there are a lot of domestic violence awareness initiatives that are taking place throughout the month, and this is our way to do our part to raise awareness to an issue that is extremely, extremely important, extremely, extremely near and dear to our hearts to do something about it, and something that has a significant impact in our community that we want to be able to make sure that people are aware of.
Absolutely. And so I want to invite our listeners to call and interact as well. The number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. You are listening to Positively Revolting. This is KBOO, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. And right now we are also talking with Sahan McElvey.
McElvey. There
okay,
you go.
Yeah, I'm just going to write it down with the accent mark on my hand right
it's
now.
It's all good.
Dang. By the end of this hour, I'll learn how to pronounce your last name. It'll be awesome. And we invite your call at 503-231-8187, talking about domestic violence, talking about the program that Self Enhancement Incorporated has, as well as this event, which I'm so happy that KBOO's been involved as a media sponsor the last couple of years. It is a great event, and it's coming up again on Saturday the 7th. I also want you to know that coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9 o'clock, Sojourner Truth Radio examines the details of Trump's tax plan, plus reports from the U.S. Virgin Islands. So, hey, Harry, I hope you're still listening, because coming right up at 9 o'clock, we'll be getting into a little bit more of the information you were starting to discuss there. The Virgin Islands that have been devastated by Hurricanes Maria and Irma. At 10 o'clock, Threshold Shift explores ultrasonic recordings from the Panamanian rainforest. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11 o'clock, Mr. Jones's Neighborhood talks to Sam Mowry of the Willamette Radio Workshop about the reimagined production of Laugh Your Dial Off. Yes, Laugh Your Dial Off. KBOO is your independent source for news and entertainment. Become a member. Please participate in your community radio station. If you manage to avoid all the messaging of the last 2 weeks, avoid it no longer and just go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Become a member of KBOO.
You know, you don't even have to click on donate anymore. It's just right there when you...
An electrode just goes straight into your fingertip?
There's a little square.
Okay, never mind. Well,
it's easier than ever before is what I'm saying. Okay.
The other thing about the Purple Mile March, Purple Mile Walk, is that really catches my eye is it's called a celebration of survivors. And could you talk a little bit about that aspect?
Absolutely. I know the last 2 years, and last year because it's more recent and closer in my mind, it's just heartwarming to see the response of survivors that come out to participate with us in the walk, and we allow survivors a chance to celebrate with each other the fact that they have survived and the fact that they have been able to take steps to put themselves in a position to get away from domestic violence situations that have been plaguing relationships for them in the past. People who have been able to come to a realization that they are of extremely high worth and value, that they are worthy of genuine love, that those things are not a gift that needs to be bestowed to you. Those things are a right that you should be able to have. And seeing that light come on, seeing people realize that I am worth so much more than what I have been told, and now I believe it. But when you see people really be able to believe that, that is absolutely worthy of celebrating. And seeing the numbers of survivors that have been able to interact with us through this event, the Purple Mile Walk for Domestic Violence Awareness, every year, it's just very, very heartwarming to see the response and to see the excitement and to see the genuine outpouring of emotion when survivors are able to get together and celebrate the accomplishments and the steps that they've made.
That is great. So I'm curious, how did you get involved with SEI? What brought you to this amazing institution?
Been involved in SEI in some form or another since the mid-80s when I was in middle school. SEI started in 1981 just as a one-week basketball camp, as a vehicle to show kids that sports and education can work together for children to be able to better themselves. The first two SEI slogans I heard as a child were sports without education is a long shot and life has options. And we'd go to the basketball camp and those messages would be ingrained in you. And it wasn't just a camp to go learn how to play basketball. It was a camp where you would go and basketball would be used as a vehicle. We had multiple classroom sessions that we would go through throughout the day.
That's brilliant.
And yeah, it was a vehicle to connect kids to education through sports. So that's how SEI started, has grown into the organization that it is today. In a professional capacity, I've been involved with SEI for the past 7.5 to 8 years or so. I've been on staff at SEI for the past 6.5 years or so. Prior to that, I contracted with SEI to do mentoring for African-American youth that were on probation. SCI used to have a contract with Multnomah County, a program called Communities of Color, where we did that work. When that contract was not at SCI anymore, they hired me on staff, and I spent some time working with families involved with DHS, and then managing some of our programs, including our domestic violence program, some of our parent education and early childhood programs, as well as our DHS-involved programs. And now I'm in the role I am right now. I'm one of the directors of our Community and Family Programs Department, and we have just a very wide variety of services that we're able to provide in our community. A lot of the wraparound family support services that we feel are extremely important in order for our kids to really have an environment where they can thrive. I think there's a lot of youth programs where we do great things with kids, and then we send them back into a community that is not set up for them to maintain a lot of the great things we're trying to impart to them. So at SCI, we don't want to do that, and we want to make sure that we're able to touch our whole community, which is why this issue of domestic violence is very important to us, because that touches our whole community. That affects the children that are growing up in our community. That affects their mothers. That affects their fathers. That affects the environment that they have to be able to thrive in for our community to be able to thrive. So, like I said, domestic violence is something that's very important to us, but all issues of our community and community engagement are very important to us as well.
Well, and they're all fairly interrelated.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's something that, again, strikes me is the whole support for the whole family system, the whole support for community and community-led engagement. That's an approach I don't see very many places.
And it's an approach that we're very proud of at SCI. I think, like I said before, there's a lot of ways and a lot of things that you can do to impact the life of a child, but it can easily be negated if that child is done with you and they're returned into a system or a community that is not conducive to their ability to grow, to maintain any of the work that you've done. So it's very important to us to touch the whole community.
Right on. If people are interested in joining the walk, can you, again, let's look at some details of the walk itself. So this is a walk to raise awareness. Is it, how do people get involved?
So right now, I believe you can still register through our Eventbrite page. So you can go to Eventbrite, search for the SCI Purple Mile Walk, and register online. Additionally, you can show up at our King facility, the King Neighborhood Facility, 4803 Northeast 7th, which is where SCI Community and Family Programs is located. Show up there on Saturday morning, October 7th at 8:30 for registration. And the walk will start at 10, but we've got a lot of stuff that goes on leading up to actually physically walking the mile. So
what? Like what?
We have face painting, we have balloons, we have swag bags that we're giving away.
Swag bags, people, you're going to want to go.
The most important, not the most important, but the most fun thing is there we have, it's kind of a half combination, just dance celebration Zumba, but you just see a bunch of people having fun together in the parking lot dancing, and then we take some time to give an opportunity for a couple of survivors that have been through our program to share their stories of success, share their celebration, share the moments where awareness has come to them, where they can be in a better place than they have been, and they are empowered to be able to take the steps to do that. So we do a lot of those things before we actually physically start walking. Then we walk from our Community and Family Programs office to our Center for Self-Enhancement, which is exactly a mile away. And then we really have a celebration when we get there. And we have everything from games and fun and prizes and food vendors. It's a party. And we have a party celebrating the successes, the growth, the awareness, and just the improvement in the lives of the survivors that have come through not only our program, but many programs throughout the Tri-County area, and some who have made it just through their own stepping forward and being able to take steps out of domestic violence situations. But we want to celebrate accomplishments, celebrate the awareness, celebrate the victories of domestic violence survivors.
It's nice to be able to celebrate something in the middle of the quagmire of a world that we're in right now. I'm glad you're doing that.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. There's a lot of things in our, just in the climate that we live in right now that can be depressing if you let it depress you. And looking at positive lights such as this, is great to give ourselves an opportunity to celebrate something in the midst of what we are experiencing now.
And to celebrate the success of community programs, I think, you know, again, community is where it's at. And if we can't empower each other through our communities and through strengthening our communities, what hope do we have, right?
Absolutely. I could not agree more.
Right on. So I'm just saying that registration on the 7th opens at 8:30 in the morning.
Correct.
And again, you mentioned the Eventbrite site, which we will be happy to also link to from our Facebook page. I want to remind people you are listening to KABU, your community radio station, and this is Positively Revolting. We want to encourage you to like our page on Facebook. You can find us Positively Revolting. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse, and you can find us there at Positive Revolt.
You can indeed.
And yeah, the number, if you would like to join us, we have, 10 minutes left or so, 503-231-8187. If you have questions for Sahan McKelvey.
There we go.
She did it. I knew I could. You know, or about Self-Enhancement Incorporated, about the Purple Mile Walk, about the topics of the day, please do give us a call now at 503-231-8187. So it seems like there is so much disempowering, just sort of stemming off of what Lynn had just said. It's so hard to find things to celebrate. It seems as though communities are being further and further disenfranchised, that the world has more and more pressure by the day, by the half day. And so I appreciate the resiliency of SEI. And I appreciate the incredible service to community that you do give. You know, KABU, again, my experience with SEI stems from years of being with KABU and working with fantastic SEI interns years ago.
Right.
And it's a really, again, as community groups go, SEI has such a broad span. So not only do you have programs around domestic violence, you also have programs on rent and energy assistance and so many other really great services to community. I want to give you a chance to sort of unpack a little bit more about, if people are listening and are like, damn, I could use some help. I need to connect.
I mean, rents in this town are becoming more nightmarish.
Well, we already talked about the gentrification that has completely, you know, devastated communities, especially the Black and African American community in town. So, again, if people are looking to connect and are really like, SEI, I've heard of it. I don't really know so much.
So, we do have energy assistance programs that operate out of our office. We serve approximately 3,500 to 5,000 families a year with energy assistance. We're able to provide energy assistance for families that have PGE, Pacific Power and Light. We're able to provide assistance with gas and oil, and a limited amount of assistance even with water, where we're able to help families access the Portland Water Discount to put themselves in a situation to provide assistance for water as well.
Which is also nightmarishly expensive.
There's a whole lot of stuff that is nightmarishly expensive nowadays.
Yes, there are.
And you touched on a little bit, just the rental market right now in Multnomah County is ridiculous. Multnomah County has about a 1.5% vacancy rate at all rental properties, which makes it extremely difficult if you are somebody who is homeless or is don't have your own place to call home. To find an affordable rental is very, very difficult. And we provide some assistance with housing and rent assistance. We have short-term rent assistance programs. We have eviction prevention programs. And we have rapid rehousing programs for families and even some for adults who are not part of families, but adult system and family system, homeless housing resources as well. Housing is just a difficult, difficult thing right now in Portland and Greater Multnomah County. If we had the financial resources to house every person that needed housing all throughout the Portland metropolitan area, there's not enough physical space to house them. So there's a lot of barriers right now just with trying to combat some of the difficulties that we see in the housing market that we are currently existing in. But at SCI, we do the best we can to work within the system that we are a part of. So like I said, we do have some housing assistance programs. You can contact SCI Community and Family Programs through our main number, which is 503-285-0493. We have hotline numbers for energy assistance, domestic violence, and housing, but I don't want to give a whole bunch of numbers, so you can get you can connect to any of our hotlines through our main switchboard number at our Community and Family Program. So I think it's easiest for people to connect if we just give the one.
When do you want to give it one more time?
503-249-0493.
Thank you.
All right. And look at that. Just about out of time. Let's one more time around the Purple Mile Walk, which is, again, this event that is happening 1 week from tomorrow. You can register through the Eventbrite site, which, again, I am going to go ahead and copy now to our Facebook page. For folks that want to get involved or want more information about that, one more time.
You can, like you just said, you can register on Eventbrite site. You can show up at 8:30 at the King Neighborhood Facility, SCI's Community and Family Programs location, 4803 Northeast 7th on Saturday, October 7th at 8:30. Registration is from 8:30 to 10. The walk starts at 10 o'clock. We are walking to the SCI Center for Self-Enhancement located at 3920 North Kirby, which is exactly 1 mile away. And it's going to be a celebration of the movement that survivors are able to make when they are able to learn, see, and appreciate their value and move out of situations of domestic violence and sexual assault and abuse.
Something well worth celebrating.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right.
All right. Well, again, I just want to thank you so much, Sahan, for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting. And thank you so much for the great work that you do at SEI.
It is my pleasure. And I also want to thank you for the support, the sponsorship, the partnership, and the cooperation that we have received from KBOO for the Purple Mile Walk and just over the years. It has been great to have an ally and a support in KBOO when it comes to local media.
It is our pleasure. It's strengthening community is what we do here at KBOO Community Radio.
And we appreciate it.
Right on. And to remind folks, coming right up at 9 o'clock, Sojourner Truth Radio examines the details of Trump's tax plan, plus reports from the U.S. Virgin Islands devastated by Hurricanes Maria and Irma. At 10 o'clock, Threshold Shift, exploring ultrasonic recordings from the Panamanian rainforest. Ultrasonic recordings, could we even hear them? These are the questions I have. I'm tuning in at 10 to find out. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11 o'clock, Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, talking to Sam Mowry of the Willamette Radio Workshop about the reimagined production of Laugh Your Dial Off. All right, that wraps it up, and we appreciate the support that you have given KBOO and Positively Revolting over the last 2 weeks of our fall membership drive. Lynn and I will be back next Friday morning with more Positively Revolting goodness. Take care, stay strong, stay together. Solidarity.
There comes a time. Your vote.
KBOO Community Radio Show is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City on Thursday, September 28th at The Know in Portland. Thirsty City is a monthly showcase that features hip-hop artists from the PNW. To kick the series off, this month's show is featuring Akira Gautama, Alex Meltzer, Crockett King, Billy Soul, and Ugly Bootleg. Again, that's Thirsty City on Thursday, September 28th at 8:30 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kmoo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Paint and Struggle, Muralism and Radical Politics in Chile, Wednesday, October 4th at 7 p.m. at People's Co-op in Portland. Paint and Struggle, Muralism and Radical Politics in Chile is an evening that will feature a short documentary film and a conversation about the collaboration between students and organized labor in the struggle for free higher education in Chile. Again, that's Paint and Struggle, Muralism and Radical Politics in Chile, Wednesday, October 4th at 7 p.m. at People's Co-op, 3029 Southeast 21st Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. All right, it is 8:59 a.m. and you are listening to KBOO Portland. We'd like to thank all the listeners who became members or renewed their membership during our fall membership drive. If you were unable to call in during the drive, you can make yourself a member of the KBOO Foundation anytime at kboo.fm. You click on the red rectangle with the yellow word donate. That's what we call it. But we know better. This is not charity. This is solidarity. This is an investment in yourselves, in your community, in your friends and neighbors, and a resource for people to communicate what they're doing to make all of us safer, better informed, fully rounded citizens, active participants in our own democracy. Oh, baby. But anyway, coming up, Sojourner Truth examines the details of Trump's tax plans and reports from the U.S. Virgin Islands. They also got hit by Maria and Irma. At 10, Threshold Shift explores ultrasonic recordings from the Panamanian rainforest, followed by flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Mr. Jones's Neighborhood talks to Sam Mowry of the Willamette Radio Workshop about the reimagined production of Laugh Your Dialogue.